Hey everyone, on this week's episode of 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna, Todd Brown's back. Goalie Gear Talk, Part 2. Enjoy. Todd, maybe I was surprised the last time you came on at the response we had because people went nuts for the Gear Talk. It's probably not surprising to you given the diverse history you've had in the game and how much time you've spent with a bunch of different companies, but you're off to a new area now. Taking a new job, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the company that you're working for before we get talking about goaltenders and the equipment that they've used in the past. So Todd, welcome back for the second time guest on 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. It was a blast the first time, and I was surprised with different people in the industry that had heard the podcast reaching out to me saying, hey, great job with Mike. That was very organic. It sounded like you guys were just old buddies having a conversation. And that's exactly what we were. We've known you since your St. Lawrence days and we've kept in touch. And I felt comfortable talking about it. It's what, you know, I've lived the last 26 years of my life doing in the goalie business, dealing with pros, retailers, and users alike. And it's my passion, you know. But to your point, after 26 years in the business, I felt that I've done that all I could in the context of the people running the business right now on the goalie sector. So it was time to move on. I've joined a tech company that is based out of Seattle by the name of Visis, which is Latin for change. And it's a well-funded company that was co-founded by a pediatric neurosurgeon, the head of biomechanical engineering at the University of Washington, and a med tech executive. Basically, the pediatric neurosurgeon was disheartened by having to tell his 15, 14-year-old clientele that they can no longer play football because of head injury that they were receiving. So he thought there has to be a better solution out there. And he looked at the current context of football helmets and saw that the evolution had been modest over the years and thought we've got to be able to do better in creating a 21st century helmet. So they went from nothing in 2015 to being the number one rated helmet in the NFL by the NFL and NFLPA in 2017, 2018, and again for 2019, this upcoming year, they received the number one ranking based on NFL and NFLPA testing on their helmet. And they've gotten into the youth football market with a youth helmet that oddly, or not oddly enough, but is the number one ranked helmet according to Virginia Tech studies. So, you know, they are taking their success in the football realm and they are looking to get into the hockey market, starting with the player helmet. So it's new opportunities for me. It's new challenges, great chance to grow with a company, leverage my relationships in hockey and help them develop their hockey market.
Very cool. I'm glad you've got something really exciting coming down the pipeline. The last time you were on, we talked about this guy a little bit. And there was a huge outpouring of people that wanted to hear more about Tim Thomas. Now, we've got other goalies that we could talk about, but you suggested that if we talked about this guy, it might take up an hour. What was it about Timmy that made him unique?
You know, I met him for the first time in 2005. I believe that's when he returned from Finland to the Providence Bruins organization. And actually, Jordan Sigalet, I believe, is his goaltending partner. And Siggy, friend of yours. And,
yeah, my old training partner with Chris Economo. Yeah, a lot of people don't actually know that Siggy and I trained for the better part of at least 4 or 5 years. He introduced you to Tim Thomas?
He did. So Siggy always wore Bauer as well, and I had a good relationship with him. And he said, listen, we have this guy, my partner, Tim Thomas. He's been struggling with different brands, just can't find anything he's comfortable with. He's wondering if you would be willing to work with him. And my first thoughts were, oh, his reputation precedes him. He's only been in North America for a short period of time, but I heard so much about how Tim Thomas was very particular about his equipment, and it could be quite challenging in terms of getting him satisfied and comfortable. But I thought, you know what? I've got years of experience dealing with a variety of different personalities. Why not? This could be a good challenge for me. So that's when it first started, and I have Jordan Sigalet to thank for that.
So did he go right into Bauer? Because I know when he first came out, he was wearing maybe even like Pete Smith pads, I think, when he got to the end. When did you guys get him, and what was it like getting him his first set? Did he immediately reject it, or was he into it right away?
You know, I made him. I talked to him on the phone for about an hour, jotted down some specs, sent out a preliminary set. He said it was okay, but we probably need to meet face-to-face to go over the things for the next set. And I thought, okay, I'm not sure where we're going with this, but next time I'm out in Providence seeing Siggy, I'll spend some time with Tim. And it didn't even get to that because he finished out, I think, this season with Providence, and then the next year he was up with the Bruins. So I'm going back on memory. I really don't know. I know that when I first sat down with him, it was over an hour and a half. And going through all the small details, you know, I don't want to fast forward too far in the timeline here, but they knew me at Legal Seafoods at Logan Airport because I was there waiting for my plane every other week, because I would literally see Tim Thomas every second week, twice a month in Boston, and go over gear.
So the moment you walked into Legal, they had crab cakes and a couple of ales waiting for you because you were back.
They knew exactly what I you know, liked to eat off the menu, and they were, you know, obviously curious of what their star goalie was changing. But obviously I kept that between Tim and I. You know, it's they knew it was a moving target all the time, and they're just happy to have me as a patron. And but I didn't really share stories. Whatever Tim and I discussed, I kept to myself. That was between him and I and his equipment, because he, you know, he was sort of guarded about that. He unlike most guys that will ask you, oh, what's so and so wear, why does he do this, Tim, that he didn't seem to care about that. It was but what he wanted and what was right for him. He couldn't care less if there was another goalie in the league having success wearing a brand of product. You know, he wanted to knock that guy off, and he wanted to work with a company and with someone that could help him get comfortable with his equipment and perform at the highest level.
So what was he looking for, though, that was so particularly unique? Because, I mean, I know I could go through a bunch of different specs, but I don't think they'd be that far off of retail. Were his, like, truly custom in that there was some really strange things going on, or was he just really into the fine details?
You know, at first, I think I maybe created the monster, because initially, you know, his stuff, his specs weren't too far off of stock product. You know, nothing out of the ordinary that most elite level goalies would have, you know, 5 or 10 on spec changes on a pad, or maybe 5 or on a block or a catcher, whatever. But for, as time went along and the more attention I paid to him and the success he started having, the more customization was required. And I don't know if we were creating, product just to create product, but that's, it seemed like that, because at one point in time I went from embroidering his initials TT on the product to TT1, TT2, TT3, so I could keep track of, you know, the product he's wearing. TT3, I would go through my TT3 notes, see what the specs are, because eventually it became, okay, this is the type of conversation we'd have. Brownie, I'd like the specs, the top from TT3 pads with the shin cradle from TT5 and the boot from TT2. And I would go, okay, so it'd be an exercise in going into my file, my electronic file, cutting and pasting it, putting it together, and then having to go back and sit down with Dave Maunder, who at the time was managing the custom specs for goalie at Bauer, and dealing with the factory and creating the tech packs for the factory, because don't forget, at that time we were producing our product overseas, our high-end product. And so he would have to be on either on Skype or on the phone, or just communicate with the factory on these spec changes, and it became quite confusing. But for Dave and I, that was the best way of operating, you know, embroidering a number, what set he was on, in conjunction with his initials, to keep track of it.
It must have felt like you were going in circles at times. Did you ever kind of come to a conclusion on what he really liked, or was it just an evolving process?
It was an evolving process. You know, he was always changing something for a comfort level, or, you know, if his game was evolving, he was trying different, you know, position-specific movements. He felt maybe we could change the product to feel a little more comfortable in it. So it was always evolving. You know, he at one point, weight was his focus, and I went out and I bought one of those Berkeley fish scales, and I still carry it to this day, because he would come in and he's like, these new pads, I'm telling you, they feel heavier than the last. And I'm like, Tim, they're not. And he goes, I bet you they are. So I would pull out my fish scale, put them on, and keep them the task, right? Because he's holding me accountable. And, you know, I had to show him, because he was very, he's a very visual person. You could show, and he's a smart guy. There's no question about it. You know, you can take him for granted. He put a lot of time and effort and thought behind what he wanted. He just didn't ask for change for the sake of change. So, you know, he kept you honest. And I think at the end of the day, when his career was starting to wind down, talking to some of the other reps, he became a little more grounded and just realized, just go and play.
Was he wearing 195s or X60s, or did he kind of go through all those?
He went through all of them, 195, X60s. It's I could have just imagined what he'd be like if he's still playing today with the Odin and the Supreme line. that was right up his alley. You know, he didn't mind being a guinea pig for new product, where other guys, you know, they're a little more apprehensive to try it. They don't want to be the first. You know, they're the laggards. They'll adapt at a later process. Tim was an early adapter. He was willing to experiment.
Huh. See, I would have taken him as somebody who was just a tinkerer, like to his absolute heart's core. That's cool that he was looking to go to the tech side of it. I mean, we've talked about somebody else, though, that was willing to do that, was Peter Budaj. And you told me that you would send him gear, basically everything, and he'd try it, right? That he was a guy who, I mean, he basically could get into any set of gear. His had to be kind of a unique scenario.
If you have him, if you ever have Boots on your podcast, ask him what his favorite Bauer pad of all time was, and he'll tell you it was the Vapor, the original Vapor.
He's got to be the only guy on earth with that answer.
Only guy on earth. And I just talked to him because, you know, he retired and we still keep in touch, and he's doing some clinics and whatnot. And he still talks about that pad. I absolutely love that pad. That was my favorite pad. I don't know why more guys didn't get into it. And I'm like, you know what, whatever works for you, Boots, that's great, you know. But it wasn't, it was a pad that was ahead of its time. The design team, and I was a product manager for that pad. I'm not ashamed of it. We tried something different. The market wasn't ready for it. You know, they wanted to evolve into something like that. They didn't want to be shocked into it. And it met some challenges from an industrial design perspective that probably weren't accepted. And, you know, it had its place in time. That's a chapter of history we wrote and we closed.
So what was it about Budzo that made him willing to do anything with it? Did he not have a preference whether it was a soft pad, a hard pad? Because I look later in his career here, and he went back to wearing even unbranded pads for a little while that I think JRZ was making them, because I'm not sure whether he didn't like the Odin or the 1S or 2S stuff, but at some point he ended up really finding what he liked, it seemed like. And I'd love to ask him these questions, but, you know, did you know that when it went out the door, Boots is going to be fine. He'll like this.
Yeah, for the most part, he wasn't too particular. He liked a softer pad. And, you know, that Vapor, you know, the whole premise behind that original Vapor pad was to kill rebounds, unlike today where we want, you know, larger rebounds that the second wave of attack can't pick up on there. So he Boots just, if you look at the pads, the model pads he wore, he always liked the softer pad. He liked the pad that had a little more flex to it. And so I think that's one of the reasons why he liked wearing that original Vapor 30 pad so much.
Another guy that must have been a big fish when you landed him was Henrik Lundqvist, because Hank was using TPS for years. I don't know the whole background on this, but how did you end up getting him in the Bauer family? And then he obviously had some unique requirements with his gear, I think. And maybe you could detail some of those things that you had to do to be able to make a Bauer pad that fit his style and his preferences.
Yeah, so Henrik, I don't think he was looking for a change. At the time, TPS was going through some financial difficulties, and it looked like they were not going to have the ability to make product for him anymore. So Hank had, looked around what's out there in the marketplace, and it was kind of open season on him. I think all the brands were making product for him, because obviously he came on the scene like lightning in a bottle, and we all wanted to be affiliated with that and have a relationship with him, because we knew he was going to go on to have a great career. Most of the brands did anyway. So,
and he was in New York City, which doesn't hurt either, right?
Yeah, at Original Six A Market Team, yeah, for sure. So, I just didn't do anything special with him. I just approached it as any regular situation, the new prospective client, and sit down, give him lots of one-on-one time. Bauer was fortunate that they have an office in Sweden, and they have very seasoned reps who work the teams well. And Hanky knew of most of these reps, and whatever work that we needed to have done with him in the summer, those guys would contribute to it. So he got a lot of attention, which I think he liked, in terms of knowing that we were there to work with him. And it caught, I think, a lot of people at Bauer off guard that when he made his decision to join Bauer, it took a lot of people by surprise. They didn't think that we had a shot. And I'm like, well, why would you think that? Like, we've been tripping over this guy, and so is everybody else. But, you know, we're doing the right things. We're saying the right things. We're doing more listening than we're doing talking. And he seemed to like that. And we were very responsive. And I know when we ended up signing them, people were just shocked, which kind of shocked me, because we did all the right things. So it came down to, getting him, every time he sent in an iteration of a product, it had to be somewhat close to what he expected it to be, because, he was nervous at the time. He was forced to make a brand change. And when product came in, if it felt as he expected it to, he knew that you were listening, you're taking the notes, you understood what he was trying to achieve. And I think that's how we won him. He felt comfortable with us.
I think Hank kind of has this mythical aura about him, though. He's the big dog, he's the king. I've never even talked to the guy, and I think that in speaking with him, I'd be nervous at first. And I've been teammates with Luongo and Brodeur, and I think it's just purely because he's the New York City goalie, plays in rock bands with John McEnroe, he does all these things. How do you take Hank out for a dinner with the company tab and try to impress the guy? Do you even bother with that? Because, I mean, like, honestly, man, like, one of the reasons that I love being with Bauer and working with you was our yearly get together where we could sit down and have dinner. And that's why we became friends and coworkers for so long, though, is because we really knew each other on a personal level. And
right.
I don't think you see that as much now at all. I mean, a guy shows up to the rink, you see each other for 40 minutes. That's great. But like, just being able to go out and share a meal is so nice to do. How on earth do you ever take Hank out in New York City? Do you even bother with it?
Well, business has changed, and you're right. Nowadays, a lot of the athletes, there's so much asked of them and of their time, is that you really don't have that free time to go out like you and I used to and get to know each other on a personal level. You really have to do that in the confines of the rink and not so much outside of it. And in Henrik's situation, the only time we spent socially outside the rink was at our athlete event, which Bauer used to host every summer, where they would have all their top athletes, signed athletes, in to get all the marketing content for the upcoming season, so we wouldn't have to bother them during the season. So we do it in the off season in the summer, and we make it enticing. We'd have it at a very exclusive resort. Everything was private, controlled environment, and that's the only time we would have dinner together. We never went out one-on-one, or if I was in Sweden, I might meet him at a coffee shop for a coffee and just talk about how summer was going and just reassure him that everything will be in New York City or in Gothenburg, sent to Gothenburg when he started skating. So I didn't really have that time. Like, where guys like Briz, he liked that. He liked going out for dinner and, you know, feeling important and getting to know the rep on a personal level, or at least it seemed anyway. So everybody was different. You know, it's no different than any other sales job. You get to know your clientele and what makes them tick. And again, a lot of it's paying attention to the small details and doing more listening than talking. I see so many sales professionals that, you know, like to hear themselves talk or, you know, want to make the perfect pitch when, you know, they should be more doing more listening than they do talking.
We'll circle back to Briz here in a little bit. Let's talk about Hank's gear though, kind of in depth, because coming from the TPS pad, and I don't even know the name of the thing, but it was way different than Bauer. What did you have to do to get him comfortable in your gear in terms of the spec on the pad that he started using when he came over?
When he came over, so I believe we were launching the 195 at the time, and it wasn't all that different from what he had been in Louisville. The big change wasn't so much on the pads, it was the glove. And you know, that evolved year after year. But when initially we were working with him, he wanted the glove that you couldn't close. If you were able to flex the glove and it closed even the slightest amount, he rejected it. He felt that, you know, he wanted the widest, most open glove you could have, and that it didn't need to close. He just wanted the surface coverage from it. Huh. So we actually used to put strapping leather, which is just kind of dating myself here, but strapping leather is the leather from the hide of the cow that manufacturers used to use for straps for goal pads. And we used to put that in the palm poly assembly of his glove, incorporate that so you couldn't close it. It didn't flex whatsoever.
Wow. Did anybody ever try to copycat that?
I think a lot of the elite goalies that we dealt with were curious about why he had a glove that he couldn't close. But over time, you know, the guys at Bauer now, you have to ask them. I'm sure that as my career was dwindling, winding down with Bauer, that his gloves were, he was able to close them. They were flexing more by the time that we were getting into the Odin one. So, it just seemed to evolve, but that was probably the biggest hurdle at first and hey, listen, I've tried to, deal with guys in the past, where it came down to, if you can't replicate my glove, I'm not switching, because I don't want to, you know, leave the company I'm with now for you guys if you can't get my glove right, and then they won't make me my glove anymore. And that's a big part of my game and the way I play the puck. I need
to
glove
puck handling's
comfortable with.
Gonna make a lot of sense for that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, there's so many. There's guys like literally that like the Bauer pads or, and obviously we had them in skates and masks, but they said, listen, if you can't get the glove right, I understand, but I can't switch because I can't take the chance the company I'm with is going to say, well, we're not making the glove anymore.
So Hank had a really unique glove, but he was the guy who helped you usher in the Odin line into North America, into pro hockey. Was he the guinea pig for it? And when you were testing stuff, was he the first guy that you kind of would bounce ideas off of? And are a lot of the ideas that went into that pad, did they come from him?
No, he was definitely all on board and was excited to be the main guy to test the initial prototype samples. But not too many people know this, but Briz was also the other. And I remember flying to Philly on the weekend just prior to the end of their season. And Giroux was doing some testing on the player side with some of the initiatives they had there. And Briz was out on the ice with the prototype samples of the Odin product. And he was like, I can't, this is not for me. The pad doesn't feel right. I don't like the long rebounds. I like the puck to die. This whole project is not for me. And he basically bailed on it after one use, where Henrik, you know, he liked the way the pads produced a long rebound. And, you know, I don't think that was ever part of the original criteria. It was obviously weight. We're trying to push the threshold on lightweight. But the materials that the team was using, and the process produced these ginormous rebounds. And at that time, that's what everybody was starting to look for. You know, obviously it was a unique selling proposition. So the team jumped all over that and obviously made that one of the benefits of the pad. And, Henrik, you know, obviously, appreciated how they performed in that way. So he was definitely, the driving force behind helping the R&D team dial in the specs for that, that product line.
I remember the first year that he got those, and I was playing for Columbus, and I was backing up to start the game. I ended up getting tossed into it, but it was the first time a lot of our guys had ever seen those pads in use or heard them. And heard, I say, because they made that weird noise when the puck hits them. It was almost this kind of hollow thumping. It's just totally different than anything that pads have made before, and you could hear it through the whole building. When you guys made that first set, and the puck started going off, and did that turn heads at all, just hearing the sound for the first time?
Absolutely. So I remember getting a text from Kay Whitmore saying, we have to talk about these pads. Some of the general managers have noticed audibly that they sound different on impact and the rebounds that they produce. Now, there's nothing in the rule book that says anything with respect to rebounds, but I just want to be armed because, you know, the way our general managers are, they're going to question why the one guy in the league, his pads make a strange noise and give out longer rebounds. So I remember going down to the next week, going down to the NHL offices in Toronto and meeting with Kay and Chris King in the evening prior to the games starting and going over the pad with them, obviously not giving them too much information with regard to the pad, but letting them see it. And, you know, I remember Kinger going, this thing looks like a personal flotation device that you throw somebody in a pool. And he goes, but you know, what do you think, Whit? Do you see a problem with this? And Kay's like, there's nothing. It's a lightweight gold pad that looks different. That, you know, what can we say? And Kinger was like, I'm good with that. So, you know, that was kind of the last we heard of it. But to your point, yes, it did garner attention. And actually Kay said, later on to me that he had some goalies complaining. He wouldn't tell me who or who they played for, that it was an unfair advantage that Henrik was the only goalie allowed to play with these pads right now.
How's it unfair? Become a Bauer goalie and get your head in there. Get going for it, you know?
And, you know, that's what I thought as well. I'd like to know who these guys are because we can definitely get them engaged in the process and get them comfortable with the equipment. But I never found out that information.
That's really interesting about Kay Whitmore getting calls from GMs because I have a kind of funny story from this season. And I mean, the Odin or the 1S, 2S pads have been out now for what? Almost five seasons, I think. But we're sitting there in the locker room and I don't know whether it was in between the first or second or whenever it was. And whoever we were playing that night, it may have been Freddie Anderson or Dubnyk. I can't remember who it was, but they're wearing that pad. And obviously the rebounds are coming off pretty hot. And it had been in the pregame notes that the pads were going to do that. And Guy Boucher comes firing in the room and he goes, this guy, he's got special pads, the rebounds, the rubber pads, they come off hot. And I remember looking at Craig Anderson next to me and we went, rubber pads? Like, what is this guy talking about? I mean, obviously, our goalie coach had told Guy Boucher that, yeah, he's got pads that give off rebounds, but rubber pads. I mean, I couldn't believe my ears when I heard that. And Craig and I were just, we had to put towels over our head. We were laughing so hard in the locker room.
Oh, I could imagine, you know, I used to be sitting at home watching a game on TV and my phone would go off and it's a text message from Kay saying, hey, just wanted to get your opinion on what this guy is using for chest and arm or is this one of your guys or why is he wearing this like that? You know, whether it was a Bauer product or not a Bauer product, sometimes he would pick my brain as I'm sure he would some of the other manufacturers reps as well. But Yeah, it wasn't uncommon. And what really predicated those text messages is he knew that he was going to get a call from a general manager, or he had already received a text or a call from a general manager saying, we played against this guy last night. There's no way he should be able to do whatever or look like this, or and what's going on here. So then Kay would have to, you know, if he didn't know already, he would reach out to one of us, either Scotty Hughes at Vaughn or maybe Hugo at CCM or myself, and try to be armed with the information that he can answer the questions, right?
I think we're all guilty of that to a certain extent, because I know I've sent you those texts before. I've seen guys that were wearing... I remember it distinctly, man, when CCM came out with that E-Flex pad. I don't know how they got around the rules, because those things were massive in terms of length. Like, Bobrovsky got a set of those that I think were like 2.5 inches bigger than what I could possibly wear. And part of that's because I have short shins and he has really long shins. But it's because they get around the caliper. Like, the NHL rules have this device that basically allows you to skirt the rules if your pads have a lot of S shape to them. And I liked a straighter pad. So these E-flexes were just monstrous. I remember looking at Varlamov and a couple other guys who had just lost 3 inches off their pads the previous year, and now they go into butterfly and they're overlapping by 3 inches again. You know, so we're all guilty of that in terms of, why can this guy wear this? And I think it's just because we're all looking for an advantage, you know?
Well, and that's it. I remember when that rule came out with the LDS limited distance sizing came out, and the way the CCM pads are constructed with their EPP insert, and the way that insert is made where in the boot and where it joins into the shin, how that configuration goes, it allowed guys to wear a little longer pad, where the way the Bauer pad or maybe the Vaughn pads put together, it allowed it to sit up higher in the gauge because of the way it was manufactured. And I lost guys because of that. So it was a smart on their part, and it was a very functional design, still is to this day. But I do remember that clearly.
Well, I'm sure it's cat and mouse, because as soon as somebody comes out with a better mousetrap, you got to catch up and build something equal, if not better, to it. That's just part of the game with this stuff. I wanted to circle back, because you talked about Brizgalov for a little bit, and I got a chance to meet him earlier this year, which you helped facilitate, and I really appreciated that. But Briz is such an interesting character. And from a rep side, you talked about getting to know him. How was he to work with? What did he like in his gear? What were your interactions like with Ilya Brizgalov?
Yeah, he was a character. I enjoyed our interaction. He was always clowning around. He was very straightforward and simple with his gear. He knew exactly what he liked, and he didn't change much. But he was just, I think he was misunderstood. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no filter with Briz, as you know, you've talked to him before. Right. He would just say, he'd say things that most of us wouldn't say, because he just didn't see any reason why he couldn't. But he was a lot of fun to work with. He was pretty straightforward. I always enjoyed going to see him. I know a lot of people may not feel the same way, but you know, we just had a good working relationship, and it was easy and it was fun.
I think with him, that the thing that I didn't realize was that, you know, English is a second language, and he didn't learn it right away in school. He had to learn it while he was over here. And so when you're talking to somebody like that, they have to think about how they're going to respond. They have to translate it. You know, that's not easy. Like, think about you or I, if we had to go speak goaltender in Spanish. You think we could pull that off? I mean, we know a couple French words, Carlis, you know, tabernacle. But other than that, I can't speak French, really. So
you're right.
I'm sure it was tougher for Briz. But like you said, there's no filter with him. And I remember you telling me, though, that when you got him into Bauer, basically he gave you a set of, I don't know, Vaughn or whoever it was, and said, here, make this. Was that right?
Yeah, he provides, you know, and that's not uncommon for an elite level goalie and making a brand switch that's been in a brand for a long time and is comfortable in that brand, to give you, a sample of what they're currently wearing and point out a couple things that they would like to have integrated into their new brand of gear. So, it was a pretty straightforward pad. It was an easy, seamless transition for him to move into a reactor pad at the time, because, the construction of it, the feel of it, it was, you know, it was aligned with a velocity pad. Mm-hmm. So, it was a pretty easy transition. The where it got complicated with Briz is that he was under contract with that particular company, and they had hang tags of him, his imagery on all their products at retail. And, you know, to keep peace in the industry, you know, I don't remember if it was Bauer or if it was Briz's agent at the time that paid Vaughn for, producing all that material that was no longer valid anymore because he switched brands. So they had to pay him off. Yeah. It was, you know, it was an honorable thing to do. And again, I don't recall if it was Bauer or if it was Bauer, maybe it's because Briz requested that Vaughn was on the hook for all these point of sale hang tags, and it wasn't fair to them. And that needed to be recouped in cost.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to our original conversation about the arms race with goaltenders, you know, how it can get kind of dirty sometimes out there. And I'm sure it's tough to try to do things on the up and up all the time when there's contracts involved. And I mean, let's face it, man, if somebody doesn't like gear and they want to switch, they're going to do it. It's their livelihood, right? So, and then you guys have to deal with the mess of it.
Yeah. You know, and it's such a small industry, you know, especially nowadays with, you know, having, CCM, Bauer, Vaughn, Bryan's as really the only four companies in the NHL. You know, a Warrior hasn't paid the licensing fee to be in the NHL. But, you know, we all know each other. We're all running the same circles. I never tried to poach a guy that was under contract or happy with a product. You know, it wouldn't stop me from talking to a goaltender and developing the framework for a relationship down the road. But if I knew he was happy with a brand, or was contractually obligated, unless they approached me and said, listen, I'm looking for a change, for the most part, I would be cordial and just have small talk with the guy. And that's, you know, Pekka is one of those guys that I developed a great relationship with. I went to the Country Music Awards in the Predator box as a guest of his, and he wasn't even wearing Bauer at the time. He had been happy in his Reebok CCM but had seen me around the rink, and I made a point to talk to him about his mask, which he wore, was wearing a Bauer mask, and that was essentially it. And we just developed a relationship, and, you know, it ended up going to the Country Music Awards and having a grand old time with him there. And then that turned into wearing Bauer, and, you know, it didn't last long because he got off to a tumultuous start, and he ended up having season ending hip surgery because of it. But, you know, there's no fault of the product or mine. It's just when the guy gets comfortable, and sometimes, you know, curiosity kills the cat. In that situation, it was, he ventured out, tried something different. It didn't work out, but there's nothing. Yeah. As I always say to guys, nothing ventured, nothing gained, you know. Let's just give it a shot. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, you know what? We'll just shake hands and keep in touch and keep the door open for the future. I don't take things personally. You can't.
Yeah. Well, I've had that through my career too. I mean, I'll give you a great example of it. Adam Burkhol is somebody I think is a great guy and a good friend. And, you know, it's not that we chat very often, but whenever I see him at the rink, we always spend time with one another. And I've never worn Vaughn gear ever. They've never really fit my style or what I prefer. They make good gear. I have no doubt about that. I think, honestly, everybody makes pretty good gear, and that's why it's just a matter of personal taste with what you like. But Berkey and I knew that if I ever wanted to go to Vaughn, it was no problem. Just go to him, talk to him, it'd be great. And I think that we're lucky that we've got some pretty good guys in the game like that, that you know you can count on. But the personal relationship aspect is huge. And it's just like anything else in life, where if I didn't feel comfortable with you, we wouldn't be having this talk now. We wouldn't have worked together for that long.
No. You're right. You've always carried yourself with high integrity. You're always honest, and you know most of the elite level goalies are like that. Some aren't, but you know you're always transparent. I'm comfortable with what I'm wearing. Should things change, you know, I know where to get a hold of you, and I was comfortable with that.
Well, let's close this up on one thing that I wanted to ask. If you can think back to one unique spec that somebody had, whether it's a glove, a pad, a blocker, in your mind, is there any one of those that was either a particular challenge or just completely off the ball that you thought was never going to work that eventually ended up on somebody's gear. Do you have an example of that?
Oh, that's a fantastic question, because, you know, we've covered a lot of ground between Belfour specs and Richter specs and Hashik specs. You know, you would like to think that there'd be something that Tim Thomas came up with because of his gear constantly evolving. But, you know, I can't think of anything that was really weird other than the one time I made him two different size pads in length, because he went on this notion that he had one leg shorter than the other. And to get into his reverse, it was a lot more difficult. And I forget if it was his right leg or his left, but it's because of the pad length. It was prohibiting him to get comfortable in post play. So we ended up making one pad, I believe it was an inch and a half shorter. Well, that didn't last long. That lasted a couple skates before I got the phone call and yeah, could you make me another set of pads? And the conversation went, well, how are those two different size pads working for you? Dad, they're not working.
Was that TT7 or TT13?
Oh my God. We were probably up in the 15 at this point. And it was funny because, you know, there's guys like Vesitoskala, who we were copying that old CCM, which was a heat and 10 pad for him when he first switched into Bauer. And, you know, we kept showing him all the new things we were working on, the latest, the greatest, you know, the Vapor X60 when it came out. And it wasn't until Kippersoff started wearing it and he was traded from Toronto to Calgary that he said to me, how come you never showed me the Kipper pad? I said, I did. It's called the Vapor X60. And he had no interest. He goes, well, I'd like to try it. And as soon as he tried it, boom, he was wearing it. So, you know, that's probably another example where there's guys who just are happy with what they have, but, you know, are not looking for a change, but they open their eyes to something new. And then all of a sudden they're a different goalie. They play differently.
Curiosity goes back to Marty Biron, yeah, taking an old set of Hanks pads the exact same way.
You know, the one thing that I want to say about Tim Thomas before we end on him is that he's one of the few guys that when he decided that it was time to switch brands, he was curious to try something else, to your point. He actually, he had handwritten me a note saying, you know, he was looking for a change, had nothing to do with the product or the company or my work. He appreciated all the time we put in, and that, it was not taken for granted. But he just needed to change his equipment because he felt that he was struggling and he needed to change his game up. So, you know, I really appreciated that because it used to bother me. And that was a pet peeve of mine, is that you turn on the TV and you'd see a guy wearing a brand of equipment that just caught you out of the blue, out of left field. Or you show up to the rink and, you know, the players haven't arrived yet and you're walking through the dressing room and there's another brand in the guy's stall. And I'm just like, listen, we're all grown men here. Let's just carry ourselves with some integrity here and just say, listen, it's not, for whatever reason, it's not working. You know, eventually I'm going to catch up to you on it. So let's just be forthright about it. And that's what I really appreciated from Tim.
That's really cool. That's really, really cool to hear. And I mean, Tim, if you're out there listening, I'd love to speak to you. So maybe Brownie, maybe you and I can get a hold of him somehow, because I'd love to talk to him. You talk about gear nerds and he's somebody that everybody looks to as being the pinnacle of it. And I'd just like to pick his brain on why he wanted to do things and the reason for switching pads so often. It'd just be really cool to talk to him. So maybe we can find him. Brownie, thanks again for this. I mean, I'm sure we could do round 3, 4, 5. Again, always appreciate your time and be talking to you soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Thanks for having me. And anytime you want to talk goalie, like I said, it's my passion.
Thanks for listening to 6 Degrees with Mike McKenna. Please make sure that you like, comment, leave a rating, subscribe, whether it's iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, anywhere that you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.